ተስፋዬ ሞቶብኝ ተስፋዬን አያለሁ። ተስፋዬ ሞቶብኝ ተስፋዬን አያለሁ። ተስፋ መቁረጥ አላውቅ እቋቋመዋለሁ። ተስፋ መቁረጥ አላውቅ እቋቋመዋለሁ። ልታሳድግ ነበረ እውነት በጀርባዋ፣ ልታሳድግ ነበረ እውነት በጀርባዋ። አሳዳጊ ሆነች ሐሰት በጊዜዋ። አሳዳጊ ሆነች ሐሰት በጊዜዋ። ተስፋዬን 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 ጥለውት በአደባባይ ላይ ሲፈራረቅበት ብርድና ፀሐይ። ለጠላት ደስታን ለወዳጅ ዋይ ዋይ። ለጠላት ደስታን ለወዳጅ ዋይ ዋይ። መሮት ተሰደደን ተስፋውን ሳያይ 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 ተስፋዬ ሞቶብኝ ተስፋዬን አያለሁ። ተስፋዬ ሞቶብኝ ተስፋዬን አያለሁ። ተስፋ መቁረጥ አላውቅ እቋቋመዋለሁ። ተስፋ መቁረጥ አላውቅ እቋቋመዋለሁ። የተስፋዬን ነገርን እንዴት እሆናለሁ? የተስፋዬን ነገርን እንዴት እሆናለሁ? አልፎ ጥላኝ ሆኖ ተጠልዬዋለሁ። አልፎ ጥላ ሆኖ ተጠልዬዋለሁ። ተስፋዬን 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 ተስፋዬን
With some music from Celeste Demese from Ethiopia. We're back on Native Solidarity News. That's Tesfaye, a future hope. Try and find some music that embodies what we talk about here on the program. And that one is to lead into a discussion about the importance of access to traditional foods, whether cultivated or wild. Particularly, we're going to focus on cultivated foods with this show. You may have heard a program we produced recently with Liz Gray of the Oklahoma Indian Times about the importance of access to traditional foods and the critique that that poses to conventional thinking around diabetes in Native communities. We have a guest. Thanks to Liz, actually, for this referral, who has been working with a group that has been involved in preserving agricultural heritage since the 1940s. They're called Corins, based in Turpin, Oklahoma, and his name is Carl Barnd. And I'd like to ask Carl if you can just introduce yourself.
Hello, this is Carl Barnes. Spirit name is White Eagle. Cherokee on both sides of the tent, and we have an organization in all 50 states, several provinces, called Corins. It's a living seed bank, and we collect, grow, and distribute and preserve the three sisters, corn, beans, and squash, plus some other indigenous crops that are cultivated. And We give ceremony plantings and have people come here. We're on highway, just off Highway 83 and 54th Conjunction, south of Liberal, Kansas, sacred Kapwa land. Any questions? Go ahead.
Thank you. Yeah, we've got a whole bunch here for you. Let's start off with a picture of First Nations food before colonization. There's a mix of agriculture and wild foods. Can you talk about that a little bit across North America, let's say?
Yes. Of course, there were gatherers and the people involved in the farmers and the people who depended on the hunted meat and gathered a lot of wild plants that they also used as medicine, let their food be their medicine and their medicine be their food. But we have mainly concentrated on the indigenous crops of corn, beans, and squash, and they were sacred to our people, and our people called them their blood, and others call them sustainers. And we'd like to get back to these because they will play a role in helping our people build an immune system and resist diabetes and alcoholism and other things. And we work with other seed-saving groups and universities all the way across the country. And Cornell University, a few years back, had written a 4-H member leader's guide exploring an Iroquois garden, the Three Sisters, that has become quite popular in through extension and the school system. About 11 states is working with this program, planting the Three Sisters gardens and teaching the people about the strength and the sacredness of the seeds and what role they play in keeping a strong immune system. Go ahead.
And part of what you're talking about, too, is not only balanced nutrition for people, but sustainability in terms of the treatment of the earth, you know, instead of growing just one crop and extracting as much as you can get out and then pumping in a bunch of chemicals. Can you talk about the importance ecologically of traditional foods?
Yes, there's a key word there, sustainable, and for the people to, you know, try to sustain, but at the same time have reverence and plant the complementary crops, which have a synergism with one another, and they provide, you know, the beans will provide nitrogen for the corn, and the squash or pumpkins will, after about one or two hoeings of cultivating, will cover, and the weeds won't come up as prolific as they might. But each one of these, as I say, work in a tandem, so to speak, and provide nutrients that to share with one another. And we're trying to get away from anything that might be toxic that we're, like you say, pumping back into our soils. We have a reverence not only for Mother Nature in general, but for the seeds, which we consider very sacred.
Now, you allude specifically to diabetes. Can you talk about what the effects have been for health and spiritually as well of people having much less access today to these traditional foods?
Yes, this is, you know, kind of a sad state of affair, but hardly a week goes by that I don't get a call from someone, a call from a man just a couple hours ago over in Nebraska by an old Pawnee village wanting to plant 3 varieties of Pawnee corn, and we've had some tests run on these, whereas a lot of the modern corns that are inbred, so to speak, will only have 2.5 to 7.5% protein, and these start around 9% and go up to 13% with a full complement of trace elements, amino acids, building blocks. And currently there's many people who buy are not paying for quality, they're paying for quantity, which is a mistake. And as I say, 100 bushel of this would equal 200 bushel of your other corn. And it is biologically superior because it has a full complement of trace elements, and they, as I said before, they all work together to help build and maintain on a cellular level a healthy immune system.
So you're talking about a situation where you, coming from the basis that food is, may seem like a kind of crazy notion to some of the chain stores, that food is about nourishment, and it's also about the relationship with the earth. Now, you are involved in filling people's requests for access to these seeds. Do you also provide agricultural information, and where is the state of knowledge at right now with that?
There's a lot of elders that people are tapping into that know how to plant and treat the old seeds. And, you know, many of the master gardeners, quote-unquote, don't understand because, you know, they brought up with a different viewpoint that, you know, looking more of a quantity instead of quality. But there's... And we're getting ready to put some work out to let it be known on websites and this and that about the organization. And we have a board of directors. And far across, we have in Winnipeg, White Mouth, Seattle, Washington, Fort Worth, Dallas, Island, California, all across the breadth and scope of North America. And these people, you know, that can be accessed, and not only for written information, but for to come and give presentations, lectures, and ceremonies. We just spent a couple days over in Missouri, just about 10 days before the terrible tornadoes hit. People from 20 states was there. Very rewarding. Thirsting for knowledge. Go ahead.
Now imagine also some of these seeds would be held by the very agricultural chemical companies and universities and so on that were responsible for pushing the more chemical model of agriculture with a very narrow scope of varieties and so on. What's it like to try and revive that, and in particular your dealings with the non-natives?
We're getting a great response now from, you know, the four races of man, black, red, white, and yellow, wanting these seeds. And there's a great awareness coming about. And they're looking for knowledge instead of belief. And it's a brand new ball game. But like I say, the other organizations that I have worked for, we have hundreds and hundreds of people in every state and several of the provinces that's just got a small backyard or a few acres that's already planting these and keeping them and putting them in deep freeze, some of them several years old. And so we feel like, in essence, as far as the modification, genetic modified, etc., we have a seed stock distributed all across the country, ready to go.
There's also a lot of indigenous activism around genetically modified organisms, recently around fish farming, you know, sort of intensive profit-oriented production where the plants or the animals are not treated well, and they're not making good foods. Can you talk about some of the connections with the work that you do with seed saving?
Yeah, we see this all down the food chain, and I have a personal friend in California who grows fish, and he's wanting to come to Oklahoma and grow corn. He's Delaware and Cherokee, and but we see this thing, and I talk to plant breeders and people who work in all kind of breeding things, and I have to remind them that many times it's not only not biologically correct, but it's not biblically correct, irregardless of what we believe or suspect. And but there's quite an impact, and we have a saying, I particularly as an elder, that all are fed, but few are nourished. In the books, it says the fullness thereof, and this means that this, whatever we eat, needs to be as ripe as possible and grown within an area of so many miles and consumed within that area.
So you're talking about not only organic agriculture, but letting the plants have a full life, you know, the vine,
right.
vine ripening and the fresh picking, and
yeah.
So really which brings it down to support for the local community.
Right. See, all economics and politics and society starts and operates on the local level, and it's been kind of taken away from us, and so we see a resurgence back in this, and this is the thing that's working already and going to work through the community gardens, working in the shadow of the church, the shadow of law enforcement, through the family, and growing this stuff locally and providing to the local people. Like I say, it's everything is local. And when you get away from that, then you lose your control and the essence that that goes with it. And when I say essence, I mean the good essence. Go ahead.
Yeah, we're going to do a little music break here. On the phone is Carl Barnes of Corns, a native agricultural heritage seed-saving organization with, as you can hear, connections to many of the other issues dealing with health and well-being, not only of human beings, but of the ecology, based in Turpin, Oklahoma. And we'll have a chance to get into some more discussion, especially connections in the broader food security and self-sufficiency movements, which are a very important topic nowadays, for a little bit of a lighter look at this issue. We have a song here for you from a British singer-songwriter by the name of Leon Rosselson. So I hope you like this, and we'll be back in a moment on Native Solidarity News. Don't go away.
Whoever invented the fish finger ought to be transmogrified, skinned, mashed and boxed into uniform blocks, then covered in breadcrumbs from collar to socks, and frozen, and finally fried. Because who'd do that to a fish? Finning its way through the seas, colours in harmony, perfectly poised, riding its flying trapeze. And progress is all very well, but not when it chops up our dreams. And it's hard to feel at ease in the world when nothing is what it seems. Whoever invented the Daily Mail ought to be cut down to size, pulped and reduced to a nauseous juice, and dried out and flattened till ready for use, then covered with newsprint and lies. Because who'd do that to a tree, raising its head to the sky, rooted in centuries, telling tall tales, breathing a green lullaby? And progress is all very well, but not when it chops down our dreams. And it's hard to feel at ease in the world when nothing is what it seems. Whoever invented the policeman ought to be licked into shape, toughened and trained till the body's a cane, till the arms are a chain, till the nerves feel no pain, till obedience rules and encircles the brain with walls, so he'll never escape. Because who'd do that to a child, jumping with joy and desire, floating in fantasies, drowning in dreams, brimming with feelings of fire and progress is all very well, but not when it locks up our dreams. And it's hard to feel at ease in the world when nothing is what it seems.
Some connections being made by Leon Rosselson. We're back on Native Solidarity News here, right in the middle of a discussion on Native seed saving, agricultural heritage, and the importance of access to traditional foods, and also the development of food traditions in terms of the growth and the well-being of a people. Our guest is Carl Barnes of Corns, which specializes in seed saving and seed exchanging. They're based in Oklahoma, and in the first part of the discussion, we've given a little bit of a historical background on the wealth of traditions around foods, agriculture, wild plants, and so on in Native North America, and the narrowing down in Native and non-Native country alike of the options that are out there to a situation where most of our food is controlled by a few corporations from the seeds and even in many cases the water on up to the agricultural chemicals, and a situation where the soil has been so abused and animals have been so abused that the plants and the animals don't have any natural immunity anymore, and the stuff still comes out looking bright and shiny on the shelves. But one of the questions that Carl raises specifically about corn is the nutritional value. I'd like to pick up on something that you mentioned about, again, the spiritual importance of this. And one promising thing that has come out of all of this is a very broad coalition opposing these abuses of the ecology. And specifically, many religious groups considering genetically modified organisms, or GMOs, as absolutely unacceptable. And I want to know if you could talk a little bit more about this kind of coalition with the work that you're doing.
We haven't got into much of that. We've been busy all this time. But I've been contacting various people, even one of the American representatives to the UN, and a good friend in Ontario, all across in Topeka, Kansas, and all across, who are, supporting this thing, and like you say, opposing these abuses, and they need to be heard, and they will be heard, and as far away as Germany, people over there who's helping to get some of the buffalo back into the plains of, guess where, Canada.
Right, at a time when the buffalo in Yellowstone, the last wild buffalo, are being rounded up because of complaints from cattle ranchers.
But see, the buffalo on the range, he has a quality in his meat of, the omega oils that's not in any feedlot, because he's eating the natural grass, and it's there whether it's not. And see, this is coming out. We're getting a lot of test run, and I leave a lot of this other to these other organizations, because I have been busy for 61 years fighting an uphill battle, and it's just not coming in fruition. And the Great Spirit tells us that we're in the rollover period, which will culminate 2005, and get ready for some beautiful times, because the people are becoming more aware, and we get what they need, and Mother Earth will provide.
We're also talking here about history, and part of the reason that I played that piece of music from Ethiopia, from Selassie Demese, is there's this idea of centers of biodiversity.
Right.
Ethiopia being one of them, the Quechua Aymara indigenous areas of Peru being another one. I mean, the world owes a huge debt to all peoples for their contributions, but especially, again, indigenous peoples. And there's a kind of a cruel irony in people who brought about this amazing knowledge and balance, not even having access to those foods. You mentioned something about corn also, and the basic starting point of that no one should be hungry, and that the sharing of the food within a community and also between peoples. Can you talk a little bit more about what that means to you?
We're seeing that develop. I work with Traditional Native American Farm Association, 19 Pueblos in New Mexico, and they work also with the Pueblos in Old Mexico and Arizona and over into California. And they're doing a lot of growing their old foods because they've had a diabetic program, and they've gone a long way. Also with the Sac and Fox people, that's Jim Thorpe people, and I work with his daughter and his granddaughter, and they have a foundation getting the people back on the foods. You know, it's a slow process. It's an educational, but as I say, more and more awareness is coming about, and we just, you know, have to stay in there and keeping this on the forefront. And it's like Liz Gray, when she's had these a couple different deals there at Tulsa, the people come in, and this makes them more aware and gets a little education and shows how important these sacred seeds are to our general health.
Yeah, and this awareness is very important because, you know, nowadays you have a kind of a subtext in a lot of media that indigenous people, or, you know, those Africans are always, why can't they feed themselves? Why can't they take care of their health? And, you know, this is a complete steamrolling of history, where, you know, the reason that this state of affairs is there is precisely because these were the, this is where the wealth was. And
the great kingdoms all across the world. And there's where our sorghums come from. I got some of the original sorghums from Africa.
So at this point, you do have, with the corn's seed exchange program, you have a huge exchange network, and you say 60 years behind you. In closing, I just want to ask if there is a way that people listening to this program in different parts of Canada can get in touch with you, and can they actually trade seeds with you?
Yes. Do you have my full address there?
No, why don't you go ahead and give that?
Okay, be Corns Incorporated, Route 1, Box 32, Turpin, T-U-R-P-I-N, Oklahoma, 73950.
Do you have any last thoughts that you want to share?
One thing. It's something that people in North America sing, and I want to say it, and I want people to think of every word when I say this. Oh, beautiful, for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain, for purple mountain majesties above the fruited plain. America, America, God shed his grace on thee and crown the good with brotherhood. From sea to shining sea, Megwich, Pinojici, Aho, Wado. Thank you, my brothers, my sisters.
Shinada, Kidila, 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 Hey, and Hey, Yo, Wow. Shinada kiddy la kiddy lo kiddy lo a hey and a yo wo a hey and a yo wo Shinada a gray, Shinada a sweet, Shinada a say and a young. Shinada, Kahiye, Shinada, Twee, Shinada, Akase, Yane, Yanga, Shinada, Kinila, 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 Ahe, Yane, Yo, Ahe, Yane, Yo, Shinada, Kinila, 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 Ahe, Yane, Yo, Ahe, Yane, Yo, Kat Poka, Dini, Yashiki, Chinas. Kat poka de dini e bato vestida, kat poka de dini e shikijin naskigo, kat poka de dini e bato vestida, shinada kinila, kinilo, kinilo, aheyane, yo, aheyane, yo.
Some music from Dine. Singer-songwriter Sharon Birch from the Southwest, the people of Big Mountain, and that's a corn song. This has been our show on agricultural heritage, and the guest again was Carl Barnes of Corns. If you'd like to get in touch with Carl, you can write to Corns, Route 1, Box 32, Turpin, Oklahoma, 73950. And I want to thank Liz Grave, Oklahoma Indian Times, helping to set that up. I want to thank Carl as well. Today is his wife's birthday, and graciously took time out to talk with us. So, I hope you've enjoyed this program here on Native Solidarity News, and I wish you a good week. See you next week.
Yeah.